we're ready to go. So it's March 24th, and we're studying the Kingdom of God. This will be our 65th study session on the Kingdom of God. And we've covered a lot of subtopics. The last one we looked at was the ability and authority God has given to us who believe in Jesus Christ, the enablement, the empowerment in the Kingdom of God. And I want to start looking at something else tonight, and that is how God rewards those that work for Him, okay? And those in the Kingdom of God are those that are doing His will. So when you're doing God's will, intentionally so, God rewards those that do that. And if you remember when we were looking at Jesus Christ teaching on the hill, where He was teaching His disciples so many of the basics about the Kingdom of God, that the topic of rewards came up a few times. So I want to take a quick look at those, and then we'll dig a little deeper. So in chapter 5 of Matthew 5, 6, and 7 are that teaching on the hill, or some call it the Sermon on the Mount. And in chapter 5, He has that section of blessed are, you know, the poor in spirit, blessed meaning happy. And when you get to verse 11, He taught His disciples, He said, blessed are ye, happy are ye, when men shall revile you and persecute you, and shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice and be exceeding glad. Rejoice means to be calmly happy, but to be exceeding glad means to jump up and down. Rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven, or in the heavens, in the heavenly realm. For so persecuted they the prophets which were before you. And the prophets were always called servants of God, and the prophets will all be rewarded. And He said, when you're reviled and persecuted and slandered for my sake, don't get bent out of shape. Rejoice. Jump up and down, because great is your reward in heaven. So I want to look at this reward. The word reward here is the Greek word misthos. And it's translated reward or hire or wages. And it says it's a primary word, and it's pay for service, literally or figuratively, good or bad. The Thayer definition, he gives several. Definition one, dues paid for work, like wages or hire. Second is reward, used of the fruit naturally resulting from toils and endeavors. In both senses, rewards and punishments, of the rewards which God bestows or will bestow upon good deeds and endeavors, and also punishments. Sometimes it talks about the reward of the wicked, but it's payment for things done, compensation, you might say. In chapter 6, in verse 1, Jesus Christ taught His disciples, take heed that you do not your alms before men. That's your acts of compassion, where you're doing things to help people without expecting anything in return. And He said, make sure that you don't do this before men for the purpose of being seen of them. If someone happens to see you, that's one thing. But if you're doing it just because you want to be seen of men, for them to think that you're really great, He said, don't do that. Otherwise, you have no reward of your Father, which is in heaven. Why would you have no reward of your Father? Well, if you're doing it to be seen of men, you're not doing it for Him, right? Why would He reward you for something that you're not doing for Him? Verse 2 says, therefore, when thou doest thine alms, do not sound a trumpet before thee, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may have glory of men. Verily, I say unto you, they have their reward. So everything they were going after, everything they were seeking, they've already gotten. People might think that they're great, admirable people, good-hearted, but they're hypocrites, meaning there's something different behind the face. But they have the reward that they were seeking. But when thou doest alms, let not thy left hand know what thy right hand doeth, that thine alms may be in secret, private. And thy Father which seeth in secret himself shall reward thee openly. Okay? So the good things that you do, do it privately. Don't make a show of it. God sees in secret, but he's going to reward you openly because that's what he wants to do. Verse 5 says, "And when thou prayest, thou shalt not be as the hypocrites are, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and in the corners of the streets, that they may be seen of men." Now, I don't think it's a problem if you pray with other people, but if your purpose for praying is to impress them about what a godly person you are, then it says, "Verily I say unto you, they have their reward." But thou, means you as an individual, when thou prayest, enter into thy closet, and when thou hast shut thy door, pray to thy Father which is in secret, and thy Father which seeth in secret shall reward thee openly. And he also talked about when they would fast in verse 16. "Moreover, when ye fast, be not as the hypocrites of a sad countenance, for they disfigure their faces, that they may appear unto men to fast. Verily, I say unto you, they have their reward." So if they're going to fast, they're going to make a point of fasting. They're going to look miserable. So when people ask, "What's wrong?" said, "Oh, nothing. No, I'm just fasting. That's all." And they'll think, "Oh, wow, what a dedicated, disciplined person this is," you know. But he said, "But thou, when thou fastest," meaning it is a good thing to do, "anoint thine head and wash thy face, that thou appear not unto men to fast, but unto thy Father which is in secret. And thy Father which seeth in secret shall reward thee openly." So these things he taught concerning rewards, how God's going to reward you. So it's the choice between being rewarded by the praise of people or the favorable opinion of people, or if you're doing something for God, then he's going to reward you. He's going to make sure that you get something for everything that you do for him. And it's the right thing. And we'll see that as we look into this deeper. There's another one in chapter 10 when Jesus Christ was sending out the 12. If you go to chapter 10, verse 40, he talked about rewards here. In verse 40, he said, "He that receiveth you receiveth me." So when you go out representing me and they receive you, they're really receiving me because you're representing me, right? They were apostles. They were sent by him as representatives of him. "So he that receiveth you receiveth me, and he that receiveth me receiveth him that sent me." And that's God, because God sent Jesus Christ. Verse 41 says, "He that receiveth a prophet in the name of a prophet shall receive a prophet's reward." So a prophet is a servant of God, speaking for God. Now, if someone would receive a prophet and take him into their home and treat him kindly, like that woman that made a place in her house for Elisha the prophet, for example, the Shunammite woman, she'll receive a reward for that because she did that for Elisha because he was a man of God. And God sees that. So God made sure that she was okay. When her son died, she got her son back to life again. God did that for her. When she lost her property because she left because Elisha told her to leave because there would be a famine, and she was away for a number of years, when she came back, God made sure that she got her land back, you see, because she had done things for God. Doing something for the man of God was doing something for God. So God made sure that she was compensated. She wasn't looking necessarily for a reward from God, but God made sure that she got it. So he that receiveth a prophet in the name of a prophet shall receive a prophet's reward. And he that receiveth a righteous man in the name of a righteous man shall receive a righteous man's reward, because he's righteous before God, right? That man that's righteous before God, that's important to God. If someone does something kind to him, God will reward that other person. Verse 42, "And whosoever shall give to drink one of these little ones a cup of water only in the name of a disciple, verily I say unto you, he shall in no wise lose his reward." So God is very diligent to make sure people are appropriately rewarded for anything that they do for him. And that includes those that belong to him, those that are working for him, those that care about him. Now look at Matthew chapter 16. In verse 27, Jesus Christ made a comment here about after he would go to God and then come back. He said, "For the Son of Man shall come in the glory of his Father with his angels, and then he shall reward every man according to his works." because God has committed judgment to his son. And part of that judgment is rewarding people for what they've done for God. Jesus Christ will be the one to carry that out. And if you go to Luke chapter 6, this was what people call the teaching on the plain, not the airplane, but it was a flat area. Verse 35 is the verse I want to look at here. He taught them a lot of things very similar to what he taught in the teaching on the hill, but it was at a different time, and there may have been some other people involved. But in verse 35, one of the things that he taught him at this time, he said, "But love your enemies and do good and lend, hoping for nothing again." Means if you lend money, don't charge interest. And if they can't pay you back, you forgive them, okay? Hoping for nothing again. "And if you do this, your reward shall be great, and ye shall be the children of the highest, for he is kind unto the unthankful and to the evil." So there's a reward for loving your enemies. There's a reward for doing good, for giving to others and hoping for nothing in return. Okay? Now, Hebrews 11 verse 6 is a significant verse when it comes to rewards. Hebrews 11 verse 6 says, "But without faith," which is believing what God says, you know, "without faith it is impossible to please him," or to be well-pleasing to God. "For he that cometh to God must believe that he is," okay, that he exists. Well, not only that he exists, but that he is what he says he is, okay? If you come to God, you believe not only that there is a God, but believe what he has said about himself in the scriptures. So we believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. Okay? And when it says he is a rewarder, that word is ginomai, which means he becomes a rewarder. So you come to God, you diligently seek him, and he becomes a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. All right? That's something that God does. He loves it when people come to him, when they diligently seek him. Now, they're rewarded for diligently seeking him. Not necessarily for diligently seeking the rewards, but seeking him. When you seek God, you're seeking his will. You're seeking to do his will, you see? And it's not just you're seeking something from him, but you're seeking him himself, to know him, to have a relationship with him. In that relationship, yes, he's going to give you things because he wants you to have them. He wants to provide for you. He's loving. He's kind. He's generous. He's a giver. He wants you to receive from him. And he wants to reward the effort that you put into seeking him, getting to know him. You see? That's from God's point of view. He wants to reward those that diligently seek him. Now, let's go to Genesis 15. I want to look at this concept of rewards in the Old Testament. We're probably going to be at this a few weeks, looking at rewards. I thought we would cover it in one night, but the more I looked at it, the more I realized this is pretty deep and expansive and very much worthwhile. And I realized it would be very rewarding to take our time and take the effort to learn all we can about it. But this Genesis 15, verse 1, significant statement that God made to Abram, who would later be known as Abraham, father of many nations. But at this point, his name is still Abram. And God had talked with him already and told him that he would bless him and that he would give him the land where he was a stranger, that he would bless those that would bless him and curse those that would curse him. And at this point, some other things have happened. Some time has gone by. And in verse 1, he said, "After these things, the word of the Lord came unto Abram in a vision, saying, Fear not, Abram, I am thy shield and thy exceeding great reward." Okay, this verse is the first place in the Bible where you see the word reward. Now, there are a number of different Hebrew words that are translated reward. And tonight, I just want to look at one of these, this one here. Click on the Strong's number. It's the Hebrew word sakar, and it means higher or wages, okay? Wages, reward, pay. fare, a fee, a passage money. So it's money given in exchange for services rendered, right? Said, I am thy shield. That means God would protect him. He would protect him all his life, and he would reward him, because God becomes a rewarder of those that diligently seek him. One thing we know about Abram is he always sought to do the will of God. Anything God told him to do, he would do it, and he did it right away. He did it without complaining. He did it without hesitation. He just did it. All he needed to know is it was God's will, and he was on it. And God said, I am thy shield, and I am your exceeding great reward. Now we're going to look at a few other verses that use this word. And after we do, I think we'll have a better understanding of what he meant by that. But let's go to Genesis 30 to get a better idea of what this word reward means. Genesis 30, verse 28. And this has to do with Jacob and his father-in-law, Laban, or Laban, it might be pronounced. But he fell in love with one of his daughters named Rachel. And Jacob said, I want to marry your daughter. And Laban said, yeah, you can marry her. Better you than someone else. Just work for me for 7 years. And Jacob said, okay. So Rachel would be the wages paid for his work. Wouldn't he get to marry her? So he worked for 7 years, and they had a marriage ceremony and had the wedding night. And then Jacob woke up in the morning, and it was Rachel's sister, Leah, who was a nice girl, not quite as beautiful as Rachel was. And Jacob really didn't have a thing for her, you know, but he wound up in bed with her. And then he goes to Laban and he says, what happened? I thought I married Rachel. And Laban said, oh, well, she's the older sister. In our culture here, we have a custom. You can't marry the younger one before the older one. So there you are. You're married to Leah. And if you still want to marry Rachel, just work for me for another 7 years. So he did. And he had these two wives. But at the end of the second 7 years, he said, okay, I want to go out on my own now. I'll take my wives and the children that I have, and we'll part company at this point. And Laban says, no, wait a minute. I've noticed that since you've been with me and taking care of my sheep, that God's blessed me. The flock is much bigger. I'm prospering. I think it's because God's with you. So I'd like you to stay and just tell me what you want for your wages. And that's why it says in verse 28, he said, appoint me thy wages. This word wages is the same word sakar that was translated reward in Genesis 15:1, where God said, I'm thy shield and thy exceeding great reward. So Laban said, appoint me thy wages and I will give it. So they made an agreement that Jacob would get a certain kind of sheep and that would be his wages for the work that he would do for him. So this really does have a literal meaning of money paid for work done, services rendered. Now in Numbers, we'll see it in a different context. Numbers chapter 18, verse 31. This is regarding the Levites. And the Levites were a tribe that God chose out of Israel in exchange for the firstborn of Israel. They counted up how many firstborn sons there were in Israel, and they counted up the number of men in the tribe of Levi, and the number was so close that God said, instead of giving me every firstborn son to serve me, give me the whole tribe of Levi, the Levites. And this whole tribe will be servants to me. They'll work for me. They will take care of the tabernacle. They'll set it up. They'll take it down. They'll transport it. A subset of the tribe of Levi was Moses' brother Aaron. He and his sons would be the high priests. Now, every year, the people of Israel would bring the tithes. That would be a tenth of their crops, a tenth of their animals. And they would bring them to the tabernacle and give them to the Levites, okay? They would give them to the Levites. And then the Levites would take a tenth of that tenth and give them to the family of Aaron, okay? So that's described in this chapter 18 here. But in verse 31, He says, and ye, talking to the Levites, ye shall eat it in every place, talking about the tithes that the people would bring. Ye shall eat it in every place, ye and your households, for it is your reward for your service in the tabernacle of the congregation. See, because the Levites, they would not have farmland. They wouldn't have the ability to grow crops and take care of animals. They would live in the cities. So the rest of the people of Israel, from their farms and their cattle, they would bring a tenth, give it to the Levites, and that would be their reward, their pay, you might say, for serving God. They would be paid by the tithes of the people, as if it were their crops and animals that they had raised. And then they would take the tithe of that and give it to the Aaronites. So I thought that was pretty cool. But that's, again, the reward for their service. Now, in Deuteronomy 24, verse 14, under the law, there were stipulations for everything in life. And one of the things was if you had a hired servant, okay? There were laws regarding the hired servants and how you would pay them. So in chapter 24, verse 14, it says, thou shalt not oppress an hired servant that is poor and needy, whether he be of thy brethren or of thy strangers that are in thy land within thy gates. So if someone was poor and needed to work to earn money to buy food or something, you were not allowed to oppress them. To oppress them would be to have them work for you and not pay them right away, okay? Or not pay them what they deserve. Verse 15 says, at his day thou shalt give him his hire. It means you pay him for his work the same day that he does the work for you. So it wouldn't be a biweekly paycheck, for example. It would be he works for you that day, you pay him that day. So at his day thou shalt give him his hire, neither shall the sun go down upon it. Have to pay him before sundown, for he is poor and setteth his heart upon it, lest he cry against thee unto the Lord, and it be sin unto thee. So if someone would hire someone, say, I'll pay you penny a day, whatever the daily rate was, if he didn't pay him by sunset, and that guy complained to God, then it would be considered a sin to the person that should have paid him on time. You see? God takes this thing very seriously. Now, 2 Chronicles. This has to do with one of the kings of Judah named Asa. 2 Chronicles 15 in verse 7. There was a prophet named Azariah the son of Oded. And he spoke to King Asa, who at the time had not yet gotten rid of the idols out of Judah. Because Solomon had turned to idolatry at the end of his life. His son Rehoboam was an idol worshiper. And Asa, I believe, was next in line. And this prophet spoke to him and told him to get rid of the idols and trust God. And in verse 7, he finished his prophecy to him by saying, be ye strong, therefore, and let not your hands be weak, for your work shall be rewarded. Okay? So he's saying, if you're going to stick with the other idols, God's not going to reward you for the work that you do for other gods. But you get rid of those idols, you trust in God. When you're trusting in God and he's your only God, then he will make sure that the work of your hands is going to be rewarded. And that's a good thing. Now, let's go to Psalm 127. And we're going to read the whole psalm because there's only five verses. Verse 1 says, except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh, but in vain, for no purpose. You know, if God's not in it, if God's not directing it, then the labor could be hard labor, but you're not going to get the godly result that you should without God helping you in it, right? So except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh, but in vain. So you can have a watchman that stays up all night and guards the city, but it's still in danger if God's not watching it, right? It is vain for you to rise up early, to sit up late, to eat the bread of sorrows, for so he giveth his beloved sleep. When you trust in God and you love God and you honor God, you don't have to work like crazy. You work the appropriate amount, and then God takes care of you. Then it says, lo, children are an heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. Isn't that cool? Children are a reward from God. I think, well, shouldn't they be a gift from God? Well, no, they're work, right? Is it work to raise a child? Is it work for a mother to go through the pregnancy and deliver the child? Is it work to raise that child and to teach him and to feed him? And to, it's a lot of work, you know? So children are an heritage of the Lord. The fruit of the womb is his reward. But it's rewarding work, especially when that baby grows up to be someone who loves God and believes God and does good things for God and will eventually support the parents as well. Verse 4, as arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. Happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with the enemies in the gate. Now there'll be children with important positions that will do important things. Now, knowing that children are a reward, this sheds a little extra light on what God said in Genesis 15. I got this far in studying this, and I said, oh, wait a minute. What did God tell Abram in Genesis 15:1? He said, fear not, Abram, I am thy shield and thy exceeding great reward. And then what did Abram say after that? Abram said, Lord God, what wilt thou give me, seeing I go childless, and the steward of my house is this Eliezer of Damascus? So he's saying, God, if you're my exceeding great reward, I need a child. I need children for God's promises to come to pass for him, that he would be the father of nations and kings shall come out of him. He didn't have a child. So the promise couldn't come to pass unless he had a child. And right now he had the steward of his house, was Eliezer of Damascus, and he's going to be my heir, he said. Abram said, behold, to me thou hast given no seed, and lo, one born in my house is mine heir. And behold, the word of the Lord came unto him, saying, this shall not be thine heir, but he that shall come forth out of thine own bowels shall be thine heir. And he brought him forth and said, look now toward heaven and tell the stars. To tell means to number them, to count them. Try to count them all. And if you've ever been out in a pitch black night when there's no moon and the stars are out and there's no city lights, there's just so many you couldn't even begin to count them. But he said, look now toward heaven and tell or number the stars, if thou be able to number them. And he said unto him, so shall thy seed be. If children are a reward, and God is his exceeding great reward, that means he's going to have exceeding great number of children. You see that? Does that make a little more sense now? When he said, I'm thy shield and thy exceeding great reward, means I'm going to protect you all your life, and you're going to have so many children that they will not be able to be counted. And those children would be, you know, the fruit of the womb is his reward. Wow. And it says, and he believed in the Lord, and he counted it to him for righteousness. He got it, and he believed it before it came to pass. It would still be a number of years before he would have his child, Isaac. We had Ishmael in the meantime, but God said, no, it's going to be a child through Sarah, even when she was 90 years old. And he had that first child, and then since then, many, many more could not be counted. Now, Ruth is another real neat one regarding reward as far as compensation for services rendered. Look at Ruth chapter 2, verse 12. And Ruth was the daughter-in-law of Naomi, who was an Israelite whose husband and two sons died when they left Israel because of a famine. They went to another country, and Ruth married one of her sons. She was a Moabite, so they went to the Moabite country. Ruth married one of her sons, and her husband died, her brother-in-law died, and her father-in-law died. So it was just Naomi and her two daughters-in-law, and she told them both to go home and try to start over again, get other husbands and raise families. And the one left, but Ruth stuck with her. And when they went back home, they had no money. I think Naomi still had her property, but didn't have a man to work it. So she sent Ruth out to somebody else's field to glean in the harvest, and happened to be a relative of Naomi named Boaz. And when Boaz recognized who she was and how she had decided to leave her family, leave the gods that they worshiped back in the Moabite country, and to worship the true God and to trust in him, he made this statement to her in verse 2:12, "The Lord recompense thy work, and a full reward be given thee of the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings thou art come to trust." That's just beautiful. So because she had come to trust in God, then God would make sure that all the work that she did, all the effort, because gleaning is hard work, you know, and just for her to leave home to stay with her mother-in-law in a land that was foreign to her and to function there, it was a big effort. And God made sure that she would have a full reward because she had trusted under his wings. Anyway, I just think that's sweet. Let's look at Ecclesiastes chapter 4. Chapter 4, verse 9. This says, "Two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their labor." Okay? So if you have two people working together, because they're working together, they can accomplish more working together than they could if they were working independently of each other. And because they would accomplish more, they would be worth more pay for the work that they do. They're doing more work. So it's a good arrangement if you can work together with somebody else. You can produce more. There's a greater reward for the labor. Verse 10 says, "For if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow." If someone falls down, gets injured, and there's nobody around to help him, then he can be stuck there. But if he has a buddy that he's working with, the one can help him up. "But woe to him that is alone when he falleth, for he hath not another to help him." Again, if two lie together, then they have heat. It'd be like a married couple. If you're in bed by yourself, it takes a little while to warm up, but if two are lying together, they get warm. They have heat. But how can one be warm alone? "And if one prevail against him, two shall withstand him." So if one is attacked, he might get defeated, but if there's two, then they can help protect each other and fight off the enemy together. "So if one prevail against him, two shall withstand him, and a threefold cord is not quickly broken." So three together, working together, that's very strong, especially if one of those three is God. If you have two people that are workers together with God, think of Peter and John in the temple there, coming across the lame man. You have Peter, you have John, you have God, and together they got that fellow healed. And you have Paul and Barnabas traveling around witnessing to the nations. You have some really good pairs of people working together along with God and getting a whole lot done. And the more work that's done, well, the greater the reward. Now, chapter 9 of Ecclesiastes, it's an interesting verse regarding rewards. And all the verses I'm looking at, the word reward is that same word sakar in the Hebrew, which means wages or higher. Okay. Verse 5 says, "For the living know that they shall die, but the dead know not anything, because they're unconscious. They're not even aware of the fact that they're dead. They're just dead. The living know that they shall die, but the dead know not anything. Neither have they any more a reward, for the memory of them is forgotten." Now, of course, when they would get up from the dead, yeah, they would be rewarded. But what this is saying, once a person dies, then there's no more working and earning rewards, okay? There's no more doing anything that they would be rewarded for. Now, we're all familiar with movies like It's a Wonderful Life, right? Jimmy Stewart. It's a Wonderful Life. And you have Clarence, the angel, who is someone that had died. And now that he's dead, he has a job to do. He's an angel now, but he has to do some good deed to earn his wings, right? According to the story. It doesn't work that way. Angels are not people that have died. angels are spirit beings that were created by God, all right? They're working for God. But people that have died, they have no more opportunity to do anything that they would be rewarded for once they're dead, okay? There's another movie, Carousel, where there's a guy, Billy Bigelow, who is a troublemaker all his life and never did anything really good, and then he died, but he had the opportunity to go back and do something good so that he could go to heaven and be an angel or something like that. There's a number of stories like that that are based on more mythology than anything else, but this is the truth. The living know that they shall die, the dead know not anything, neither have they any more a reward, meaning nothing else that they can do to get rewarded for. For the memory of them is forgotten, and their love and their hatred and their envy is now perished, neither have they any more a portion forever in anything that is done under the sun. Okay? So they will get up again, but while we're here in this earth with this sun shining over us, their job is done. They'll be judged and rewarded according to what they had done. Now, of course, if they're a believer in Jesus Christ, we're already judged as far as righteousness goes by our believing. But there will also be a judgment of our works and rewarding of our works, which we'll get to eventually, but not tonight. There's a few other sections I want to cover with you. Go to Jeremiah 31. Jeremiah 31, verse 16. And this is shortly before the time that Jerusalem and all of Judea would be destroyed by the Babylonians, and they would be in captivity for 70 years before they could return again. And many of the people believed that it was just all over and that there would never be a return, but God said, no, there will be. And in verse 16, it says, thus saith the Lord, refrain thy voice from weeping and thine eyes from tears. For thy work shall be rewarded, saith the Lord, and they shall come again from the land of the enemy. For people's work to be rewarded as it should is a blessing from God, and I want to show you that in Deuteronomy, where it covers the blessing and the curse under the law. And this had to do with Israel, because they were given the law, and they were told by God by way of Moses that if they would love God and do what he said, that they'd be blessed. If they would worship other gods and abandon God and break the covenant, they'd be cursed. But look at some of these things. I'm going to read through this, and we're going to pick out the ones that have to do with the work of your hands. So verse 1, it shall come to pass, if thou shalt hearken diligently unto the voice of the Lord thy God to observe and to do all his commandments which I command thee this day, that the Lord thy God will set thee on high above all nations of the earth. And all these blessings shall come on thee and overtake thee, if thou shalt hearken unto the voice of the Lord thy God. Blessed shalt thou be in the city. Blessed shalt thou be in the field. Blessed shalt be the fruit of thy body, the children that you raise, okay? That is a reward from God. And the fruit of thy ground. It takes work to grow the crops, right? To plant and harvest and everything. But the fruit of thy ground will be blessed. Your work will pay off. And the fruit of thy cattle takes effort to raise cattle. Increase of thy kine and the flocks of thy sheep. Blessed shall be thy basket and thy store. Blessed shalt thou be when thou comest in. Blessed shalt thou be when thou goest out. The Lord shall cause thine enemies that rise up against thee to be smitten before thy face. They shall come out against thee one way and flee before thee seven ways. The Lord shall command the blessing upon thee in thy storehouses and in all that thou settest thine hand unto. And he shall bless thee in the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. See, everything you set your hand unto, the work that you do will be productive. There'll be a full reward for the work that you do. The Lord shall establish thee in holy people unto himself, as he hath sworn unto thee, if thou shalt keep the commandments of the Lord thy God and walk in his ways. And all the people of the earth shall see that thou art called by the name of the Lord, and they shall be afraid of thee. And the Lord shall make thee plenteous in goods, in the fruit of thy body, and in the fruit of thy cattle, and in the fruit of thy ground, in the land which the Lord sware unto thy fathers to give thee. The Lord shall open unto thee his good treasure, the heaven to give the rain unto thy land in his season, and to bless all the work of thine hand. Okay? He'll make sure that it rains so that when you plant the crops, they'll grow. Thou shalt lend unto many nations, thou shalt not borrow. The Lord shall make thee the head and not the tail. Thou shalt be above only, thou shalt not be beneath, if that thou hearken unto the commandments of the Lord thy God, which I command thee this day, to observe and to do them. And thou shalt not go aside from any of the words which I command thee this day to the right hand or to the left to go after other gods to serve them. But it shall come to pass, if thou wilt not hearken unto the voice of the Lord thy God, to observe to do all his commandments and his statutes, which I command thee this day, that all these curses shall come upon thee and overtake thee. Cursed shalt thou be in the city, and cursed shalt thou be in the field. Cursed shall be thy basket and thy store. Cursed shall be the fruit of thy body, the fruit of thy land, and the increase of thy kine, and thy flocks, and thy sheep. Cursed shalt thou be when thou comest in, and cursed shalt thou be when thou goest out. The Lord shall send upon thee cursing, vexation, and rebuke in all that thou settest thine hand unto for to do, until thou be destroyed, and until thou perish quickly because of the wickedness of thy doings whereby thou hast forsaken me. The Lord shall make the pestilence cleave unto thee until he have consumed thee from off the land, whither thou goest to possess it. The Lord shall smite thee with a consumption, and with a fever, and with an inflammation, and with an extreme burning, and with a sword, and with blasting, and with mildew, and they shall pursue thee until thou perish. And thy heaven that is over thy head shall be brass, and the earth that is under thee shall be iron. The Lord shall make the rain of thy land powder and dust. From heaven shall it come down upon thee until thou be destroyed. I mean, you're going to plant crops and they will not grow. Okay? You're going to put in all the work, all the effort, and it's going to be hard work, but they will not grow. You will not get the reward. The Lord shall cause thee to be smitten before thine enemies. Thou shalt go one way against them and flee seven ways before them, and shalt be removed unto all the kingdoms of the earth. And thy carcass shall be meat unto all the fowls of the air and unto the birds of the earth. No man shall fray them away. If you're defeated by your enemies, you won't be able to eat the crops that you grow. All the stuff that you've earned is going to be taken away from you by the enemy. And if you're sick, you know, you won't be able to enjoy it either. Look at verse 30. Thou shalt betroth a wife, and another man shall lie with her. Thou shalt build an house, and thou shalt not dwell therein. Thou shalt plant a vineyard, and shalt not gather the grapes thereof. Thine ox shall be slain before thine eyes, and thou shalt not eat thereof. Thine ass shall be violently taken away from before thee, and shall not be restored to thee. Thy sheep shall be given unto thine enemies, and thou shalt have none to rescue. Thy sons and thy daughters shall be given unto another people, and thine eyes shall look and fail with longing for them all the day long, and there shall be no might in thine hand. The fruit of thy land and all thy labors shall a nation which thou knowest not eat up. And thou shalt be only oppressed and crushed always. And it goes on and on. But you see, the blessing would be you do the work, God makes sure that it's productive so that you can enjoy the fruit of it. That's your reward for your labors. And if Israel would deny God and worship other gods and break the covenant, they'll do the same amount of work, maybe even more so, and get nothing for it. Because other people will eat their stuff, take their wives, take their children, take their animals. You see? So just to be able to do work and enjoy the reward of it, that is a blessing from God. Okay? That's all we have time for tonight. But there's a lot more I want to get into with you regarding rewards. But for someone to be rewarded for their labors, God is saying that is the way that it should be. When his people trust in him, love him, and do what he says. Okay? But we'll continue with part 2 next week on being rewarded by God. Okay?